Hey, everybody. I'm Ben Swan in for Rick Sanchez. Today, let's talk immigration. The U.S. southern border is a hot topic in the 2024 presidential election cycle, as more than 12 million undocumented immigrants have poured into the U.S. over the last few years, and states are at a breaking point. Once a problem left to border states to deal with, during the Biden years, states like Texas and Florida have resorted to unconventional means to send their message to the feds that they are fed up. What's the truth behind this massive and very complicated issue? This is Direct Impact. And I'm Ben Swan in for Rick Sanchez. Illegal immigration has long been a hot button issue for states like California and Texas, Arizona, even Florida. But following the sunset of Title 42, which effectively shut down America's southern border due to the coronavirus, the House Committee on Homeland Security released what they called a startling report outlining CBP encounters for fiscal year 2023. It revealed this, a 40% increase from 2021 and a shocking 100% increase as compared to 2019 before President Biden was in office, putting that number at roughly 2.5 million encounters just for fiscal year 2023. That's not to mention the countless other migrants who evaded Customs and Border Protection agents entirely. So, what is happening right now on the southern border? I got to tell you, it's vastly different than what has happened in the past. I actually grew up on that border, born and raised in El Paso, Texas, across the border from the city of Juarez, Mexico. In fact, it is the largest border metroplex in the U.S. As a journalist, I worked on that border and in Mexico for over 10 years, covering border issues and drug wars. And I can tell you this, what is happening on that border today is not the same border as in the past. To help break all of this down, we brought in a pair of experts. I want to introduce you to Bill Crane. He has been a political analyst and commentator for 20 years, as well as a former communication staffer on Capitol Hill, and former U.S. diplomat and government and media relations specialist, Jim Jatras. Guys, thanks for being here. Let's start with this. In June of this year, a 12-year-old girl was brutally raped and murdered by two illegal Venezuelan immigrants in Houston. Listen to what the girl's mother has to say.
What is your message as her mother to the justice system?
Please don't fail us. Please don't let us down. The city of Houston has done everything in their power to bring this to light, and now it's the justice system to do their part as well. It's a community effort. It's a partnership. We all have to follow through, and we all need to give them their punishments that they deserve, because my baby didn't deserve this.
What do you hope that punishment is?
That they receive worse than what my daughter did.
Again, those two migrants crossed the border in El Paso separately at different times, and then both wound up in Houston where this terrible murder took place. Now, back in 2022, Republicans in Congress, they made a claim that Venezuela was emptying its prisons to send violent criminals to the U.S. That claim, by the way, was based off a source in a Breitbart article. Those congressmen sent a letter to DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas on this issue, followed up by another letter earlier this year after the death of Lincoln Riley at the hands of an illegal Venezuelan immigrant. Now, here are the facts that we know, though. Encounters with Venezuelan migrants have shot up over the past few years. Some context. In 2020, Trump's last year in office, there were just over 4,500 encounters with Venezuelans at the southern border. In 2023, that shot up. You're not looking at a mistype on the screen here. It shot up to 334,000 encounters. And while it's hard to exactly prove what percentage of these people were incarcerated at one point, we do know, in fact, there has been a clear decline in violent crimes in Venezuela from 35 to 26 violent deaths per 100,000 people in 2023. Anecdotally, we see the case of Lincoln Riley, as well as this 12-year-old girl who was, again, raped and brutally murdered in Houston. So, guys, let's bring you into the conversation. And, Bill, we'll start with you. What do we know? Do we know, in fact, if countries like Venezuela and others are taking violent criminals out of prison and sending them to the United States?
We do know that countries like Venezuela and other countries like Paraguay, Uruguay, in the lower half of Latin America and South America, have had a variety of economic impact coming off of the pandemic, broken supply chains, difficulty in, except for Venezuela, receiving oil, and a generally flattening of their economy with inflation. So with stagflation and rising prices and flattened incomes, people have been fleeing those nations and they've been heading to Mexico and towards the U.S. border. We have a very porous border now and lack security there that has as you've mentioned, changed even in the last 30 years. And our Canadian border, I got stuck on the northern side of it myself due to a passport issue and almost didn't get to return to the United States about 2 years ago. That's not the case in what we have on the porous south side. So we are seeing agents of ISIS and other terrorist organizations out of the Middle East. We are seeing people that are coming here with evidently no goodwill aim. They're not coming here for opportunity. They're coming here because they're fleeing. And whether they're refugees or they were political prisoners or they were in prison or for incarceration, the paperwork they bring with them, if any, doesn't demonstrate that. And if they're coming in illegally, they're typically not concerned with their paperwork.
Yeah, Jim, we often hear about, and this is absolutely true, right? The U.S. destabilizes countries. Certainly, we see that in Central America and we see that in South America. But recently, we're seeing this influx of migrants from more stable, I guess you could say, in developed nations, and really from all over the world. I mean, we're talking about encounters with migrants really from, again, from India, from China, from Russia, from across the continent of Africa. We're seeing people coming from the Middle East. It's not just on the southern border, people coming up from Central and Southern America. That's not where they're coming from in a lot of these cases. In fact, here's a graphic for you. Encounters with migrants from India at the border skyrocketed by over 600% from 2021 to 2022. Migration from China surged tremendously during that same period with an astounding increase of 384%. So what is driving this particular trend, Jim?
Well, I think the short answer is because they can. I mean, somebody can say they're not sending their best, and I think there's a reason to believe that a lot of them are criminals or people who are economic migrants who are not going to do much for our country. But frankly, I don't think we need to be importing an educated overclass either that's going to be basically crowding out the job market for American graduates. But I think the real problem here is numbers. I mean, the Band-Aid that the Trump administration, excuse me, the Biden administration put on a few weeks ago to start limiting their catch and release program at 2,500 a day, that's still 90,000 people a month, over a million a year that would be essentially processed into the United States, and in most cases, we'll never see them again. And not even accounting for, we don't even know who these people are necessarily. And as Bill says, whether they're economic migrants, whether they're criminals, or maybe they're just, and neither in those cases. So this is, and we have to also add to that so much of our southern border is effectively controlled on the Mexican side, not by the Mexican government, but by various criminal cartels who are crossing that border with impunity. Some of these are being very heavily armed members of these criminal organizations. So we've got a real lawlessness problem down there. This administration is not doing anything about it. And frankly, even the previous administration, even though they tried to do some things, as we know, Mr. Trump was thwarted at almost every turn. And that's why we see state governments, especially that of Texas, trying to step up to the plate and do something about it, and actually having to fight the federal government and the courts and Mr. Mayorkas's department to try to stem this flow.
Well, and Bill, like, look, nothing happens in Mexico without cartels controlling it. Certainly, we know that this flow of people who's coming up through Mexico, they're all being kind of processed and moved through the country by cartels. They're making billions and billions of dollars off of this. But there's other entities in the United States that are making a lot of money off of this, right? Because there's a big business now in non-governmental organizations, NGOs, who are helping to process and then integrate illegal immigrants appearing at the border. In fact, Border Patrol, which is now over capacity, by the way, they cannot handle the numbers of people arriving, is known to release illegal immigrants to the NGOs for processing, shelter, food, cell phones, and then they're helping them to get to their final destination. In April of this year, take a look at this. DHS awarded another $300 million of taxpayer money to NGOs to carry out this work, with another $340 million set to become available later this year. That money is going to be spread out over about 55 recipients, some of whom, again, are NGOs, some of whom are state and local municipalities. So, Bill, the question here, has illegal immigration in this form become big business for NGOs who, again, are going to thwart any lobbying efforts to try to get that border under control when you've got hundreds of millions of dollars going into those organizations to move people around the country?
Well, we also have detention centers. We also have a huge problem down there with sex trafficking. So you have all these illicit enterprises coming into the country, and we don't have a social safety net in place, funded federally or state, to absorb all of that. So they're basically creating these shadow budgets where NGOs are funded or given resources temporarily, sometimes permanently, and continuing resolutions in the budget. to take on responsibilities that used to be handled by the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Immigration and Naturalization, or working with state Medicare and Medicaid operations, and even sheltering the children. There are, you know, that was about 6 months ago, they were placing a lot of these children that they were separating, that they believe might have been victims of sex trafficking, and keeping them in office parks that happened to be open or abandoned so that they were inexpensive to rent. These are not any more humane conditions than turning around and sending them back to the country from whence they originated.
Well, and to that point, let's stay with you, Bill, for a second, because what do you do with these people? I mean, when you have so many people, I mentioned that I'm from El Paso, right? I go back to El Paso quite a bit. Walk through the airport, the El Paso International Airport, and there are people lined up on sleeping bags or wrapped up in space blankets laying across the floor, and they get their own TSA line to be just sent out all over the country. They're holding a clear bag with a cell phone in it, a little bit of information. They get on a plane and they go somewhere. But what do you do with all these people? When you have millions of people, again, who are in the country, they where are they going to work? Who's going to feed them? Where do they go? I mean, how does any of this
being
dealt with?
Well, in Texas, Governor Abbott, and over in Florida, Governor Rick's last name has escaped me, have
Perry.
Been taking some of these folks that have been on the streets or in their airports and flying them to places like Martha's Vineyard and Palm Springs. Gets quite a different reaction there. But the reality is there's no easy answer. And even if we were to start massive deportation, there's no federal budget or agency equipped to handle that. You're going to use a cruise ship. How are you going to massively deport people? The airlines aren't going to start giving us planes. So if nothing else, going back to the last two pieces of major immigration legislation in the United States in 1982 and the 1986 Immigration Acts, which came under President Ronald Reagan and then House Speaker Tip O'Neill, we have to put a pause, temporarily pause immigration, set numbers in place for each country for illegal immigration, make security operate, which it can. The Rio Grande is a problem in Texas. It's about 1,000 miles of a 3,000 mile border, most of it through private land.
That's right.
But it can be made more secure than it is. And then begin the process with a legal path to immigration for those who've been here paying taxes, working in the economy. But we do have a zooming increase in mentally ill, medically fragile, and people that are not able to in any way help or support themselves once they arrive here. And the United States has its own domestic issues on that front that need to be prioritized and take care of first.
Jim, I'll give you the last word on this. What do we do? You've got millions of people who are here. The rate at which they're coming across is unprecedented. What do you do with the ones who are here? There is talk about Trump saying if he gets into office again, he's going to send people back. Is that feasible? Is it even possible?
I don't know if it's feasible, but look, if the bathtub is overflowing, you can bail the water out, but first you got to stop the faucet. You have to stop more of them coming in. And nobody can tell me that if we took those tens of billions of dollars that we give to Ukraine, we give to Israel, we give to Taiwan, and concentrated on defending our own country instead of mucking around in other people's business, that we could not close that border. I don't think it should be a question of, gosh, do we have the resources to process all these people in, and what about the people with these problems, those problems? The solution is close that border. Do not let them in. And then we don't have to worry about processing them. And then we can address the question of deporting the people who are already here. Now, some people would say, oh, but we're obligated under treaty. You know, there's conventions on refugees that we have to accept. How is it that our presidents can, with a stroke of a pen, take us out of arms control agreements, but they cannot withdraw us from some of these treaties that, at least in principle, obligate us to take these people in and process them? It's a question of national will, national priorities. Are we going to do the right thing to defend our country's borders? And that means build whatever structures you need, put as many men down there as you need to close that border.
Jim Jatras and Bill Crane, thank you both for your time on this subject, a very important subject. And in fact, we're going to continue to cover it. Right after the other side of this break, we'll have Manila Chan, and we'll talk about what the Biden administration is doing right now, as it claims it's doing something about this problem. Are they really? We'll be right back.
From the very start of the Biden presidency, we were told the occupant of the Oval Office was obsessed with his legacy. 3.5 years later, that legacy can be summed up with a few choice words: division, failure, incompetence, and shame. History will remember Joe Biden.
And And welcome back to Direct Impact. Today we are talking immigration, and continuing that conversation now, let's bring in international correspondent Manila Chan. Manila, thanks for being here. So the House Homeland Report we just talked about, I'm sure you heard the conversation we just had, it dropped some huge numbers at us. Which numbers stood out to you?
Well, Ben, these are some big numbers. Yeah. I mean, just since Joe Biden took office, there have been about 7.5 million encounters nationwide. When you add the estimated 1.7 known gotaways, we're pushing well over 10 million. So since this report was just for fiscal year 2023, which ended last fall, CBP has reported a surge at the border since then, with some reports estimating the total number of migrants at roughly 11 or even 12 million at this point. Some other big numbers in this report: 169 individuals who are on the U.S. terror watch list were caught at the U.S.-Mexico border. Close to 36,000 others who had known criminal convictions or had perhaps outstanding warrants, either in their own nation of origin or even here in the U.S. Because remember, some of these people have come in and out of the U.S. previously for years and had committed crimes in their time here. Another startling number, Ben, was the amount of fentanyl that was confiscated along the southern border. Over 27,000 pounds. That's almost 13,000 tons. And for visual purposes, Ben, that is the average curb weight of a fleet. Six Ford F-150 trucks. Six of them. That's enough fentanyl to kill 6 billion people, leading to, for some to argue that, you know, the security at the southern border is actually a national health crisis.
Yeah, and the reality of any time you're talking about numbers when it comes to drug seizures, I mean, the amount of drugs that flow across that are not seized, and in a lot of cases, the ones that they're seizing are the ones they're allowed to get, right? We can talk about that in another show because that's a whole other thing. But I want to talk about also just kind of what's happening here and the way this works. So, you know, one of the things that makes these illegal border crossings vastly different than at any time in the past, right? When someone was caught crossing the border, right, illegally, they were detained. In some cases, they were actually sent back. Again, this is for decades. Today, when someone crosses the border, you know what they do? They go and look for a Border Patrol agent, and they give themselves up because they know that when they are, they're taken to a facility, they're fed, they're given a plane or a bus ticket to anywhere in the country they want to go, they're given a free cell phone, they're given a debit card, and then they're given a piece of paper that says show up for a hearing in like 3 months, and they don't do it. Again, I mentioned this earlier, like, go to the El Paso airport, and it looks like a processing facility there. How do you get this situation under control, and how did it get so out of control so fast, do you think?
Well, I certainly don't have the answer about how to get this under control, but I can tell you how part of it, I can explain how part of it has transpired as to why it's gotten out of control. Social media, Ben. Believe it or not, social media giants like TikTok and Instagram are in effect having a direct impact on this new wave of migration. There are social media accounts dedicated to teaching people how to get from South and Central America up to the U.S. southern border, teaching them what to do at the border, what to say when they arrive, giving maps and step-by-step instruction. There are other accounts showing off the benefits of presenting themselves to CBP when they get there, showing off their new cell phones, their new devices, and even the debit cards that are loaded with money from the U.S. government. Now, this is a new phenomenon, obviously, despite social media having been a thing for well over a decade. I mean, we saw this with the Arab Spring, right? So social media is playing a large role in driving up these numbers, exacerbating this, of course, especially in the way of the Venezuelan migrants, is the continued diplomatic mess between our two countries. The continued sanctions there, you have economic and political strife that are driving Venezuelan nationals up north.
Yeah, but to your point about the social media part of it, look, you're absolutely right. But the reality is the social media influencers, if you want to call them that, who are posting these videos, they aren't lying. It's not like they're tricking people and saying, hey, if you come to the U.S., you get a free phone. There's no phone. No, there is a phone. They say, you'll get a debit card full of money. No, there isn't. Yeah, there actually is. So they're actually getting everything that they tell them they're going to get. Look, the Biden administration, let's face it, they created a lot of this mess, if not the entire thing, right? Let's just call it what it really is here. This is not that When Trump was in office, he was dealing with the same problem. He was not dealing with the same problem. The Trump administration, the numbers are extremely low compared to the Biden administration. And actually, before Trump, Obama deported more illegal immigrants than any other president before him. So you had the most deported under Obama. He actually deported more than Trump, believe it or not. And then Trump actually closed the spigot where they couldn't come in near as easily as they had been able to before. With Biden, they opened it up. Now the Biden administration's pretending, oh, we're going to create this new thing to crack down on the border. We realize it's a crisis. It's a crisis of your own making. Do you think anyone believes him, first of all? And second of all, the people who are coming here, they're not going to actually get stopped, turned around, and sent back, are they?
That's a yes and no answer, Ben. So, you know, here in Washington, there's a very Washington thing. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. And in Biden's case, he is getting this from both parties regarding the southern border. So let's be clear about that part. Republicans are saying that, you know, the murder of Ms. Riley and the 12-year-old Nungare would have been averted had those men not been here in the first place here in the U.S. And then, of course, the resources being used to aid those migrants and housing them, clothing them, feeding them are actually incentivizing more illegal immigration. Meanwhile, his own party, the Democrats, are actually criticizing his latest response to the surge. Beginning in June, as Bill mentioned earlier, Biden issued a temporary suspension of entry for what they say the wording is specifically certain non-citizens. They don't actually describe what certain non-citizens look like or where they're from. But then you couple that with an interim rule by the DOJ and the DHS, which places limitations on asylum eligibility and would promptly deport those who they say do not qualify. And then they would be subjected to a 5-year ban of re-entry and possible criminal prosecution. So those in his party say this is a Trumpian style and Trumpian mode of handling this surge in lieu of Trump's Title 42 enactment during the COVID pandemic. And then the sunset of that after the pandemic came to an end, which was just a little over a year ago. And that's when the surge began and why Biden took kind of these emergency measures.
And not a trick question, so if you don't know, it's okay. But are they defining what it means to say you'll be promptly returned to your own country? Because promptly could mean within 2 weeks. Are they going to let them walk out? Because right now you leave and you come back and then they have a hearing for you, but no one's making you attend these hearings. You have no idea where these people are going.
Ben, I scoured the DHS, the CBP website, all the government websites, the Homeland Committee's website. Nobody can define what promptly deported actually means. So I guess it's like beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I guess this is a case-by-case scenario. Nobody here, at least in Washington, D.C., has yet put it in writing what promptly deport actually means. So I truly don't have an answer for you because I can't find one, and I'm not sure that anybody in Washington actually has that answer, Ben.
Well, they don't have an answer because it's not part of the plan, right? They're not actually creating a system by which people are turned away. There's no turning away. To say we're going to promptly deport you, again, it means absolutely nothing. But I want to ask you one more thing because we're short on time, which is there's also a humanitarian issue here. There are some people who would even watch this show, right, and say, oh, this guy's against immigrants. No, I'm not. But I'm against the abuse of people. And one of the things that happens when cartels are bringing people up from the southern border, there's an incredible abuse of people happening there. When people arrive in this country
Absolutely.
With no job, no ability to work, yes, they have a preloaded debit card, but how quickly is that money gone? When you have children who come into this country and no one knows where they are, thousands of them that have come into this country, and there's no record of where any of those kids are, it makes the situation absolutely rife for corruption and abuse. And I think that's the other part of this story that is completely ignored. Again, growing up on the border, you see it all the time. People who come here for a better life who are enduring terrible conditions and who truly are treated like second-class citizens. When you have millions of those people in this country, what do you do about that part of it? We have 1 minute.
Well, there obviously is a major human toll attached to this whole system, this whole infrastructure of illegal immigration or undocumented migrants coming through the southern border. And as you mentioned, the countless number of children that are used as props and used for human trafficking by smugglers, the coyotes, and the drug cartels. And as the panelists mentioned earlier, this is who actually controls the mode up north is the cartels. And until Mexico and the United States can both, especially with the new incoming president in Mexico, until they can work out a plan together, I don't foresee any stopping this, no matter who is in the White House coming next January, whether it is Trump or Biden again, Ben.
Absolutely. Manila Chan, always good to talk to you. Thank you. And that is our show. I'm Ben Swan. We'll see you next time as we continue to cover stories that have a direct impact.